oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas, this Honorable Court.
Please be seated. The court has two matters on its oral submission schedule this morning. In the order of their appearance, they are 9387, severance against Patterson, certified question from the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. The second one is 9901, Texas Rice Land Partners Limited and Mike Latta against Denbury Green Pipeline Texas LLC from Jefferson County and the Ninth Court of Appeals District. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these cases, and we'll take a brief recess between the arguments. A recording is being made of the arguments and is being broadcast on the web and will be available on the court's website later today. The Chief Justice is not sitting in the first case. The court is ready to hear argument in the first case.
May it please the court, Mr. Bremer will present argument for the appellant. Appellant has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. The court's initial decision was correct in its fundamental position that easements created by public use along the shore do not pick themselves up and roll inland onto new areas of private land not subject to public use simply because the vegetation line has moved. The key to this decision is not the avulsion or erosion doctrine. The key to this decision is settled easement law holding that easements created by public use are defined by that public use in terms of extent and location. And while they may deviate by minor degrees as public use moves uninterrupted, they do not substantially relocate on the basis of some change in a geological feature like the vegetation.
What did Carol Severance lose that she didn't have or that she had? You know, we talked about the bundle of sticks last time and whether or not she actually received this when she acquired the property.
Right.
And it seems to me that she acquired the property after the 1958 statute and all these. And so therefore there was no easement there for her to acquire. She purchased that house and whatever was on there. So what did she bargain for?
Well, she purchased a fee simple title with her land ownership going to the high tide line and no easement ever proven on her property. So what she lost was the fundamental right to exclude and control her property when it was determined that because the vegetation moved, that now there's an easement and public access on that property where there had never been any public access before. So she's losing that fundamental right to lose a property. The fact that there was the Open Beaches Act prior to her purchase, it doesn't strip away her core fundamental common law rights because there is no common law easement or rolling easement incorporated in the Open Beaches Act. So if the Open Beaches Act is taking away her right, then the Open Beaches Act is causing a taking of private property.
Excuse me, may I ask you, did she have an expectation of exclusive use at that point in time when she bought that property?
She absolutely did. It's not an ordinary hazard of beach property ownership to have your land turned into a public beach park overnight simply because the vegetation line disappears. That's a state created hazard. And if the state's going to create that hazard, then it has to mitigate for the impacts on private property rights, which don't stop at the right to exclude others. But as soon as you have that purported easement on there because the vegetation has moved, then you've got no right to repair, no right to rebuild. You can be removed at any time. That's not something
you bought it. She didn't have that expectation, isn't that correct? It was because of a naturally occurring event that occurred later, correct?
Well, you expect naturally occurring events, but you don't expect that because the beach grass disappeared and you have a sandy lot one day that means that that's all of a sudden public property.
Well, how often does the vegetation line move in this area of the state? Isn't it pretty frequently an occurrence that there are storms and hurricanes that move that vegetation line?
Well, sure. You expect storms and hurricanes, and you expect that they're going to have some effect. But you don't expect, nowhere in the common law can you find an expectation that because the vegetation disappears, therefore a public easement that's created down here is now going to be over there. That's not an ordinary expectation. That's a state-created doctrine. Even the Open Beaches Act didn't recognize that rolling easement doctrine when it was enacted, and it didn't come into being later on, and they still can't identify, I mean the state, still can't identify any common law authority that allows an easement created by walking on one strip of land to suddenly be way inland, 150 feet, because it's just denuded of vegetation overnight.
But isn't there a distinction between the beach and, for example, a river? Because with a river, if you have some type of a sudden event, it's going to be very unusual, right? An earthquake, you know, what's going to cause a river to move, which is usually a boundary. Whereas when you're talking about the ocean, these events that cause the vegetation line to move are recurring. Don't they happen quite frequently? Do you know exactly how many times they've happened in the last 100 years?
They have happened very often, right. But I think the crux of this case is not hurricanes or rivers, it's easements. Easements, when you're talking about river cases or beach cases, you have to put it in the context of easements. The easement created along Galveston was not created by the vegetation line. It was created by public use. And once it's created by public use, that use defines where it is. Now, maybe as use migrates inland, as the water line moves, the use can migrate inland moderately, but it can't pick itself up and move because the vegetation line moved. The vegetation line is only a boundary marker to the extent at the original easement, to the extent that it is coterminous with the line of public use when it was created, then it's a boundary marker. But once that vegetation line departs and leaves the area of public use and is just way in there, like to the highway on Bolivar Peninsula, it doesn't have anything to do with the easement anymore. It's just vegetation, and the easement stays where the public use was.
Well, if it doesn't roll, then isn't it going to be impossible, perhaps, to ever prove that public use? Not because somebody's put up a fence, which would be a legitimate, relevant way to prevent the hostile use, but because of acts of nature that can't be controlled. And because of that, because that easement is going to naturally move either to the land that's seaward of the vegetation line, or it's going to move underwater, because of that recurring event, isn't it going to be practically impossible to ever prove an easement by prescription?
Well, I wouldn't say it's impossible. The state has done it before. In fact, the easement on Galveston was proven by prescription implied dedication by public use. So I don't think it's impossible. And I don't think that the easement that, again, the court's initial decision was correct, and it was correct in this sense, that a public use can migrate by minor degrees when it follows the water line uninterrupted, but it can't substantially relocate. And so I'm not saying that it's absolutely rigidly fixed. What I'm saying is the question before the court that the Fifth Circuit certified is whether an easement rolls based on nothing but the vegetation line. And that the answer to that has to be no, because there is no common law rule that allows that anywhere in the United States, and including Texas.
It seems like that was a good balancing test to me, anyway, that the legislature came up with this compromise on the 200-foot vegetation line. But I still don't understand, if Carol Severance purchases property subject to all the disclaimers that there's this easement, why she even has standing to pursue this claim. When you sign an arbitration clause, it says you're going to give up your constitutional right to a jury trial. You're going to dispute your litigation and do arbitration. How's this not any different? I mean, it was clearly she was aware of what she was giving up.
Well, I would say there's a difference because she didn't sign away any constitutional right. She was told that the state customarily used the vegetation line as the landward boundary. And that's fine. The state can customarily view it that way, but unless it has the force of law, then no one has an obligation to conclude that they have no legal rights. And she looks at the Open Beaches Act, she looked at the common law, and can't find a rolling easement, can't find why the state has a right to customarily view it as the vegetation line, as the common law boundary. And I would just say that as a matter of sound constitutional principles, you can't divest people of their constitutional rights by warning them beforehand that, hey, we might come and take your property if these events occur.
I absolutely agree with you. But that's not what occurred here, in my view. How should the state proceed if you prevail here? If there's some discussion about a $40 million project that was delayed or canceled or may not even be used to restore the beaches of Galveston, maybe that money can be used for public education. But what should be done here for the best interest of the public and the best interest of the citizens to protect their private rights of ownership here?
Well, I'll take that as a two-part question. I'll answer the renourishment issue before. I think that is, frankly, a red herring. I think that the beach was renourished at Surfside. At the same time, the state officials were telling you they couldn't renourish the Galveston beach area. And the beach was renourished at Surfside because they considered it to be covered by the high tide line to be the wet beach. And I'm just wondering why I can't do the same thing on Galveston, put a strip of sand to the high tide line that the public can use, and there wouldn't be any concern about whether they could re-nourish the beach or not. If it can be done down there, it could be done up there.
Well, what if that's done and the landowner says, well, thank you very much, state of Texas, but I'm going to fence this off?
Well, you can't fence off the beach to the high tide line.
You can fence off, well, I think maybe with this decision, you can fence off the beach to the water.
Well, I would disagree that you necessarily can do that.
You certainly can block, block access to the property, or the sand in front of the beach home.
If that was a real concern, I don't think it would be very, very expensive to buy a few vertical access easements to allow the public to walk down to the new strip of sand that the state could dump there to the high tide line. That would be extremely inexpensive. We're not talking about buying all of Texas coast. It would be a few vertical access. So I don't think that's, compared to $400 million that said can't be done, I don't think that's a serious
problem. And the state would do that again after the next hurricane and then so on after the next hurricane?
Potentially, or it can plan farther ahead than it has in the past and acquire and make bigger acquisitions and start to acquire private property if it wants it, according to the law. I understand that the public desires, or some would say needs, additional land, but that's not the law of the land. The law of the land is easement law. The law of the land is you got to prove easements if you want them, or get them by consent, for instance, trading renourishment for an easement, or pay for them. And that may be difficult and inconvenient in some cases, but it's supposed to be difficult to acquire easements on private property.
Mr. Bremer, let me ask you a question. You're not contending that there has to be a meets and bounds description of an easement?
No.
Okay.
So I'm not.
So somebody, take a tract of property that there is an easement across, because somebody has to be able to get from one side of the property to the other to access their own property. So everybody acknowledges there's an easement across that property. But something happens, a sinkhole or something that makes going the usual access across that property is no longer available. And the only other way to get to the property is through somebody's house. What happens to the easement?
If you got to go through someone's house, well, I say in that situation, the house wins.
The house wins?
Yep, the house wins.
So the easement goes away.
If that's the only situation, and I would think that would be very unusual, but that's the only situation where the easement is, the original easement is lost, and it's between the house and the easement, then the house is going to win. That's the primary use of that property. That's the part of the fee simple title, and the easement is not. But in most cases, what will happen is something slightly different. You'll have the pothole or whatever, and then they'll go around it. And I'm okay with that. Easement of law allows that.
Right.
And I'm okay. And I think easement of law allows, as the water line creeps up, the public use follows the water line, not the vegetation line, because that's inland. The water line, as public use follows that water line, that it can creep up too. not based on erosion, but on based on the uninterrupted public use. But what can't happen is there's public use here, and then the next day the state says, now there's public use over there too, where there never has been. That's a different creature altogether. And
you claim where there never has been. Do you agree that the public has a right to use the beaches that predates any division or subdivision of those lots? I mean, when do you contend this public's right to use the beach
When did it begin? In the 1964 Seaway case, it was proven that there was an easement along Galveston due to public travel since the late 19th century.
So you would agree that the public's right to use the beach predates any subdivision of the land? I mean, it's been there forever.
The public's right to use the area that it proved it had acquired an easement to predates the subdivision, but it didn't acquire a rolling easement. It acquired an easement by implied dedication and prescription to a line of vegetation that the Seaway Court believed was fixed. And that line of vegetation marked the end of the public use. So yes, it acquired a right there, but it never acquired the right for the easement to be way over there.
Even if it was acquired by prescription or implied, does the public retain anything, though? Does the public retain anything after the movements that caused the changes?
Yes, I think this is the best accommodation you're going to get, consistent with the law. And that's that easement that was proven along Galveston is probably underwater now. I'm quite certain it is. But I'm not saying that easement disappeared instantly as soon as it became underwater. Because public use migrates uninterrupted, or has migrated uninterrupted as the water line moved in, that public use continued even though the original easement area is gone. So I'm saying, yes, there is, but it's limited. It's not what the state officials claim. It's not what the Fifth Circuit asked about, a rolling easement that moves solely on the basis of the vegetation line. It migrates by minor degrees based on public use, but not not way inland based on vegetation line.
What is your
line.
Strongest argument supporting that it's limited when it was there to begin with since time immemorial?
If an easement is impliedly dedicated, the public right extends only to the land actually used by the public. Tiffany on Real Property, Volume 3, Section 374. The scope of a prescriptive easement is primarily a function of the continued use.
But if we assume that the public had the right to access the dry beach from time immemorial, then that is the public's use. They had used it.
Well, and I'll make this my last answer unless you have more questions. It didn't have a right from time immemorial. There was no, when the state granted the land on Galveston into private hands, there was no reservation. The court made this clear. So the right, at that point, the land's all private. The right came into existence when that, by prescription and dedication, and when that was proven. It wasn't from time immemorial. This state starts from the premise that land that is dry sand begins as private property. That's the Lutes decision. It starts as private property. Then you have to prove an easement.
Any other questions?
Sorry, one other question, if I may. The argument's been made by the state that it cannot renourish beaches that it does not own. The briefing cites Section 33.609 of the Natural Resources Code that indicates that with consent of the property owner, and in some instances without consent of the private property owner, renourishment projects may continue. In fact, it says the commissioner may undertake a coastal erosion response with the consent. How is that different from the state's position, or they're just contradictory?
I just don't think that there's been enough effort to figure out how you can do it. I think you can do it that way, by consent. Yes, it may take a little bit of time, but that's the price of ensuring that the law is followed. Or as I said before, you can re-nourish to the high tide line, and then there'll be a long strip there, just like there is in Surfside right now. Or you can trade, if property owners are willing, new sand for an easement. There's many ways to do it.
Thank you, counsel. The court is now ready to hear argument from the appellees.
Court, Mr. Geiser will present argument for the appellees.
May it please the court. Plaintiff today continues to press for a property right that she never had. And in doing so, she invites the court to eviscerate a fundamental public right reflecting an unbroken tradition of dry beach access extending to the days of the Republic.
Let me ask you this. You had the 1958 Texas Open Beach Act, about 200 years of what I think is public use and precedent, and the Texas Constitution that you argued last time appeared to me anyway to be favorable to you. That didn't carry the day. What, if anything, new do you have to persuade the court to change its decision?
What I hope will persuade the court to reconsider its initial decision is, first, that there's really not a lot that the court needs to alter in order to get what we submit is actually a correct understanding of the common law. The court today actually unanimously rejected almost every point that my friend has made. Easements are not static on the beach. That doesn't reflect the underlying natural composition. They do move in response to natural changes. The vegetation line is connected to the wet beach, and if principles of avulsion do not apply to the wet beach precisely because hurricanes and other storms are an expected and ordinary hazard to beachfront ownership. But the logic of that point compels the conclusion that the same hurricanes affecting the same area of the dry beach necessarily are also expected by the property owners.
Mr. Geister, why would anybody want to build a house anywhere close to the beach if you're right?
First, people didn't always build houses close to the beach because the public has traditionally used this area of the beach for the access to using today.
But what your rule would be is that somebody who purchases property and thinks behind the vegetation line and thinks that they have a fee simple interest in that ground and can build a house, that's not so. That you say that somewhere along the line, if a storm comes through, the state can require them to give up that house with no compensation. Because it, in spite of what they think, it is burdened with some easement that might roll onto the property. Is that what the rule is going to be?
It's what the rule has always been, Justice Green. I think what's important, too, is don't just look at the expectations of the front row landowner. Look at the expectations of the second, third, and fourth row landowner who purchased those properties in reliance on the idea that they could access the private beach, not that they'd have a really good view of a beach that they can't walk on. It's also the expectation that fueled the investment in the surrounding economic community, which is fueled largely by tourism, as the Galveston Chamber of Commerce explained. So the expectations in this area are actually most startlingly upset by a rule that suddenly pulls the rug out from under dry beach access.
Is that persons who purchase homes on the beach on the second, third, fourth, or even fifth row back from the front row of houses buy it with the expectation that one day the state can take it?
They bought it with the expectation that they were have land that is in a dangerous area, which is why the legislature has a statutory disclosure that explains exactly how the common law works in this area. People invest against the backdrop of that common law rule, and they often...
There's a difference between God taking your property and the state taking your property. If it's the former, that's way beyond this court's pay grade. If it's the latter, both the United States and the Texas Constitution provide a remedy for that.
But that begs the predicate question, is there a property interest here at all?
And you've said that there is one going back centuries, but you've cited no authority for that proposition in your briefs or today yet.
That's not so, Your Honor. We disagree with that. The state appellate cases, including Feinman, Macha, and Moody, have traced the dry beach access all the way back since the days of the Republic.
Would you go through that? Because I know that has been argued before, but not successfully. And so how can you convince the court that, in fact, the common law does go back prior to the last several years?
Well, I think it's important to distinguish between finding a case that reflects the underlying common law principles and understanding that the common law rights arose far earlier than those cases came into existence. Before the lease decision...
That is the problem. I mean, if it's not in a case and it's not in a statute and it's not in a deed, where is it? That's the problem.
But it's in all those three things, Justice Hecht. The Open Beaches Act reflects that the vegetation line, which does move, is part of the common law. The Texas public endorsed that and enshrined it into the Texas Constitution. The unanimous decisions of four intermediate appellate courts, including in cases where it was refused NRE. So this court did look at it.
They seem to be in some tension with Seaway. Do you think that's true, or how do you read Seaway?
I don't think so. I think Seaway said that the evidence showed that the beach was generally in the same geographic location, but in Feynman, looking at predominantly the same record, the court recognized that, in fact, that sort of blinks reality to think that no storm hit the Texas coast and affected it for over 100 years.
But there was an argument in Seaway, the first argument in Seaway, was that we have this right as a matter of law, and the court said we don't know of anything to support that.
I think if the court did see that, it was incorrect, because if you look to the general use and the general common law principles and how this operates, you look to things like fixed and settled expectations used to tradition. You see how, if you take an originalist approach, how the public has used this general area since the beginning of time. All these factors point in our favor.
Let me make sure we're on the same page here. In Seaway, after a trial, it was proven that there was an easement there. What you're asking for today is a proclamation that an easement rolls without proof that it exists on this new property, correct?
Well, it's the same easement, but without new proof.
So you're asking that we hold that an easement rolls from an existing parcel onto a new parcel that the public has never used for a beach.
In exactly the same way.
True or false?
True, in the same way that the same principle applies, for example, in the navigational servitude context. A river could be located on one piece of property, and there can be what truly is an evulsive event, and hurricanes are not truly evulsive events. It can cut a new channel, and even if that river has never been on that new property before, the public has the same rights to the same navigational servitude. It's not a new navigational servitude. The public doesn't have to reestablish it in that new location. It's the same easement. And the reason for that, it's defined by its natural dynamic boundaries, which every member of this court recognized necessarily must apply to have any sensible or workable system along the dry beach context. A static system, as my friend has suggested, the court should adopt, is completely unworkable in this context. And we would submit that applying the principles of avulsion to this context would be equally unworkable for the same reasons that the court said it would be unworkable as applied to the wet beach.
So your position, the state's position, is that in this case, the easement that existed on the parcel between Severance's land and the ocean, that easement can roll back onto the next property when a hurricane takes away the first row of properties. And that if another hurricane comes, it can roll back two more rows of lots if the hurricane takes away those lots. What's the limit on how far this easement can migrate or roll?
The limit is looking to the common law and how it's developed over time. And those are expectations that those landowners have, not just by virtue of looking to the uninterrupted beach access, but the statements from the legislature.
Would it be a reasonable limitation? A limitation based upon what's reasonable?
Well, I don't see how it's reasonable to expect that a tradition that has prevailed uninterrupted for over 100 years should suddenly disappear.
So it can even be unreasonable. Is that what you mean?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It can even be unreasonable.
It would be unreasonable for a landowner in this context to expect the law suddenly to change overnight, notwithstanding the fact that it's been endorsed by all three branches of Texas government, that the political branches that are closest to shaping the substantive law of Texas property.
So all of those houses that were built along the beach area, it was unreasonable for the property owners to have built those homes there.
Not at all, Your Honor, because they enjoy the use of the property while it's actually not been swallowed by the water. And it's important to remember that if the water actually does up and submerge that land, title shifts to the state. That doesn't mean that they're unreasonable for locating there. It just means that it's a risk.
So let's go back to the example I gave your opponent. The sinkhole takes up the access. The only other access across the property is through the house. And you say that, in that instance, the dominant estate, that would be the easement in that case, would go through the house, would destroy the house?
If the easement is a dominant estate, then the surveying estate, which is the land, is subject to the rights of the easement holder.
Has nothing to do with it in that case.
Well, you have to reasonably use any easement, including this easement, which is why if there's a broad stretch of beach, the state, as a matter of policy and as a matter of common sense, and I think as a matter of background easement law, will not remove the house, because the public can still effectuate the use of the easement, the purpose of the easement. I think a contrary rule that says that principles of avulsion apply to movements of the dry beach would eliminate the public's easement, notwithstanding the fact that it has been a part and a bedrock fixture of Texas common law since the days of the Republic that's prevailed uninterrupted until this past November.
Counsel, you keep talking about the public's use of this property has remained uninterrupted since the days of the Republic. The property that was used for a beach since the days of the Republic is gone.
Do you agree with your opposing counsel it's underwater?
It may be underwater, but I think that fundamentally misunderstands the...
Do you agree it's gone? You can't build on it?
You can't, Your Honor, but that's why this is not an easement defined by meets and bounds location.
Let's answer my question first. When the Hurricane Rita came, the property that the public was using for a beach got wiped away. It's gone.
I don't know for certain, but I believe it is, but I...
Okay, so this uninterrupted use by the public of the beach for this long time is on property that's underwater, not on property that's in the dry beach today, correct?
Yes, but that does not...
And as a matter of physics, that's correct.
I'll concede for purposes of the argument that it is.
So this uninterrupted line of use going back two centuries is pretty tenuous, because unless the public's using the beach underwater...
Absolutely not, Your Honor. And I think that fundamentally misunderstands the situation. This is an easement defined by use, and it's not use tied to meets and bounds location. I think that one mistake that my friend has made is thinking that there's a universal and categorical rule that applies across the board to every kind of easement, and that's simply not the case. Easements depend on context. They depend on purpose. They depend on workability. And all of these factors tie into suggesting that this easement in particular, which is not defined by saying, let's take a GPS line of where the public beach started, and that's where the beach is. It recognizes that they use this area of the beach, the dry beach, which necessarily was established as the beach moved over time, with storms over time. So I don't believe it's...
How is the exclusive use easement any different from title that the state sought in Lutz?
It's different both legally and practically. Practically, it's different because the landowner still has the right to maintain a structure on the property so long as it's not interfering with the use of the easement. And in fact, if the water goes back out, then the landowner has the full rights again if the vegetation line moves seaward of the house to exclude the public from the land. Legally, it's different because
That same movement occur with title? If the state owned the dry beach, which that's what it was asking for in Lutz, that same shift would occur, would it not?
It may, Your Honor, but I think, again, it misses the point. A right of use under an easement is different than title. Title is one thing, and the right that burdens title is different. And in the same way that having title doesn't give you the right to have a nuisance on your property, even though it's not in the title itself, the state didn't impliedly reserve the right to apply the common law of nuisance to any piece of property.
What legal weight should we give the Jones and Hall grant from 1840?
It's there, but it's irrelevant. And the reason it's irrelevant is it dealt only with title. It did not grant sovereignty to those landowners. They're still subject to the background principles of the common law, which include things like the doctrine of nuisance and include things like easement law, including the fact if you look down and trace the historic use of this area of the beach, an area of the beach, again, not defined by meets and bounds location, but defined by the use of a certain category and character of beach, namely the dry beach, as defined by the vegetation line and the mean high tide line, then that is the easement that burdens that title. So any title that was granted under the Jones and Hall grant, it didn't say that for here to eternity, adverse possession is out the door because that wasn't written to
but
the Jones
no
and Hall grant.
But there was no express reservation of either title to that property or public use of the beach.
They didn't have to in the same way they didn't have to reserve the right to apply the doctrine of nuisance to that title. The title is a bare grant of title. If they had written into the title that the public has a right to use that land, then this wouldn't be an easement under the common law. It would be an easement as a matter of title. But that's not what we're arguing here, so I really don't think it's relevant to this case. What is relevant to this case is...
Is it relevant that before the Jones and Hall grant, the state had a right to preclude private use of the beach? But didn't reserve that right at all in the grant, or didn't mention it in the grant?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, for the same reason that I'm sure the state had the right to apply the doctrine of nuisance to those properties and yet still have the right to do that today.
So if I own a piece of property that has an easement and I deed it to someone without recognizing that easement, your argument would be that the easement still exists? Or your argument is that the beach is different and we should apply different property law to it?
There are different kinds of easements, and I think there are two fundamental points here. One, if there's a prescriptive easement written into the title and that's suddenly wiped out, then of course that easement disappears. But the other fundamental point is this is an easement that is implied under the common law, and it also could arise after title was granted. It's simply not the case that if, let's suppose, for example, that the common law right to beach access didn't exist in 1841. If it did exist by 1850 or 1851 by virtue of common law principles, then that easement prevails today, even if the title didn't initially reserve that right.
What are the elements of an easement by common law?
You can get it by prescription or dedication.
But it's not those. It's not that. I mean, those are clearly defined elements in the law is what easement by prescription or by dedication. That's not this situation. So it's by custom is the way that you've described it in the briefing. What are the elements of an easement by custom?
Custom is, just to be clear, a fully independent way that supports reaching the same conclusion.
Okay, it's different than the dynamic easement. What are the elements for that?
That you look to a consistent, uninterrupted use since the beginning of time, which I believe we have here. It's peaceable and it's reasonable. It reflects common expectations and understanding. It's been endorsed by the political branches.
And those are all fact questions.
I don't think any of those facts are contested. I think it's absolutely clear that the public has used a dry beach in whatever location.
Actually, there's no proof. No evidentiary proof in this case, going back to the U.S. District Court. So there's no proof of what you're arguing.
Well, there's no proof.
Facts are uncontested, but there's no proof in this record.
Your Honor, this is an unfortunate consequence of the awkward posture of a certified question. This case was dismissed at the motion to dismiss.
I'm familiar with the procedural posture of the case, but there's no proof in this record, no evidence.
But there is proof in other cases that the court can take judicial notice of.
But we don't. When we take a case, we're bound by the record. We don't go to other cases and adopt their records to decide this case.
Just as the court's initial disposition in this case referenced the consistent unbroken access since the 1830s, I think that the same logic and the same factual findings that undergirded that conclusion can undergird a revised opinion recognizing the same exact use.
Do you know of any instances where rolling easements have been recognized in other contexts?
I think a great example is the one of navigational servitudes. That is a river that changes, even with a pure avulsive event. It can cut a dramatically different channel for the river. And the public's rights to use that river for navigational purposes carries with the change. And here, if you actually look to the principles of avulsion, they simply do not apply when the natural forces that are affecting the dry beach are entirely ordinary, entirely expected, and entirely predictable.
Are there any other cases that you are aware of where the court has gone back to the original land grant to determine what the state or the public has and doesn't have?
I'm not aware of any that would ask, has an easement that has arisen after the land grant somehow affected by the lack of a reservation in the original land grant?
Can you distinguish between a natural, slow-occurring event, also an act of God, like erosion, versus an avulsive event? Certainly, I mean, they're obvious, but the court said that an easement would still exist if it's a natural occurring erosion versus an avulsive event.
I think that highlights the pure unworkability of this rule. No one will know exactly what unspecified subset of natural events are suddenly avulsive events and which are pure erosion. It's impossible to disaggregate the effects of daily erosion from a storm or from a hurricane. And it's not clear at all anyway how much does the land have to move in order to say that suddenly this is a qualifying avulsive event so that the government entities on the ground who are charged with regulating the beach and engaging in systematic programs of beach renourishment know if they're putting public dollars into private land.
Well, we can argue about workability and policy, but in the end, if the state doesn't have this right and it doesn't exist for a long time, for us to give it to the state today is a taking under federal law, is it not? Under the Florida Beaches case.
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. Actually, Stop the Beach Renourishment points in exactly the opposite direction. Even under Justice Scalia's plurality opinion, he looked back and asked, it's only judicial taking if the law was clearly established in support of that particular property right. In this case, the law was clearly established that this property right that's being claimed does not exist. I think it's impossible to read the Open Beaches Act.
If that were not the case, then it would be a taking.
If every consideration undergirding an ordinary common law analysis were flipped, as it would have to be in this case, so that, in fact, it was abundantly clear that the public had never used the dry beach, the political branches had never endorsed it, the rule had proven completely unworkable, Evulsive events were always deemed to eliminate the public's rights, notwithstanding the fact that they've held it, if you look to the true record, for over 100 years, then yes, it would be a judicial taking potentially under a four-justice plurality, not a majority of the court. But of course, that's not the case here. And if this is an ordinary common law analysis, I think this court has never before rejected the considered judgment of the political branches and has looked to a rule that's proven workable.
Well, if the legislature were to pass a law that says my house that I own is not my house, that would be a violation of the law.
Of course,
absent,
Your Honor.
Assuming no other contradictory facts.
Of course.
So defining property, as the U.S. Supreme Court has said, is a matter for the states to decide, and the legislature can't pass a statute, and hasn't, as I see it in this case, passed a statute that attempts to take away property. The Open Beaches Act says the public has a right to use the beach, even a private beach, if it has acquired the right of use by virtue of continuous right in the public since time immemorial. And we've asked several times for you to give us some authority going back before the 1964 Seaway case for the proposition that the public has had the right to use private beach property for public easement since back time immemorial. Give us authority. One case, one statute, one constitutional provision.
I think I can give you all of those. If you look to statute, section 61.025 is the statutory disclosure section, which makes emphatically clear that the legislature understands that not just the easement as it existed at one point in time controls, but the easement moves in response to erosive events. Those are disclosures that were written by the legislature into the statute.
And if we disagree that the Open Beach Act establishes a rolling easement, any other authority?
If you look to Fineman, Macha, Moody,
because the Open Beach Act doesn't mention rolling easement, doesn't mention migratory easement.
That is not true, Your Honor. The statutory disclosure section, which again, this isn't a charge to the GLO to promulgate a regulation to provide a disclosure. 61.025 says specifically that these words, this is the legislature saying this, these words shall be included in every deed in this area. And it says specifically that the public has a right between the mean high tide and the vegetation line, and that right continues after the vegetation line is moved in response to natural events, including storms. So I think that there is no way to say that the Open Beaches Act and the legislature did not understand the public's right to be fully dynamic.
61.025 says that the notice must be included in an executory contract. Doesn't say included in the deed. It further says that the notice to the property owners is that your structure may come to be located on a public beach because of coastal erosion and storm events. As the owner of the structure, you could be sued by the state of Texas in order to remove the statute or the structure. Under my reading of it, nowhere does it say you buy this property subject to the state's taking it. It says the state may sue you to prove a position, but you can always sue. The question is, can you win?
Well, there are two separate things, Your Honor, and I apologize if I said deed instead of executory contract. I think those
said
are
deed.
I apologize.
If we were in the deed, we wouldn't be here today because she would have sold away the right to an easement. It says executory contract.
I think I disagree that there's a material distinction between those two, but I'll accept that for now. I think the important point is that the part of the Open Beaches Act that says the state can sue is specifically for removing the structure. It doesn't say that the public's rights under the easement need to be established in a lawsuit. Those rights exist. That's why the legislature.
But it doesn't say the contrary either. You can't presume that the statute says everybody purchases beach property with on the condition that the state can take it at some point in the future.
But this
it has to say that, and if it does, we probably have problems with the U.S. Supreme Court.
This is not a taking because there's no property right in the first instance. But I think we respectfully disagree. I don't think it's even possible to read 61.025 and have any doubt that the legislature understood that the public's rights in this area are fully dynamic in response to erosive events and evulsive events.
Any other questions?
Yes, you were asked just recently to provide all the authority that you can think of. I don't know if you fully explained that and were able to give that. Would you like to answer that completely?
I think that it's answered, I think, in part in the four filings we have at the rehearing stage. But I also think that it's important to look to the common law analysis and traditional common law factors. And this court has never thrown out a rule that's proven so durable and stable over time based on so little evidence and so little basis and the inability to cite a single case, rule, precedent, principle that suggests that the rolling easement hasn't existed since the beginning of time. And the records in Fineman, in Moody, in Matcha, in the Arrington decisions. These are all premised on the idea that the state has a fully dynamic rolling easement because the state has used, or not the state, I'm sorry, the public. The public has used the dry beach since the beginning of time. That record was uncontested, I believe, in those cases. And even if it were contested, the court rejected it because it's so patently obvious that this is how this area of land has been used, no matter its location.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. I would like the court to imagine this, what, or focus on what the state claims. When the private property owner loses its land to water, when the water encroaches on the property owner's land, the state says it's all ours now. When the water encroaches and cover their easement, they say we can move it. Property owner doesn't get to move their property and land. Why does the state get to move its property and land? They don't have any reason for that except tradition. But a tradition that supposedly exists since 1960s or 1970s without legal or constitutional foundation doesn't become legitimate because it's been around for a while or it's popular in some quarters.
What's your take on the Seaway case?
I think the Seaway was the case that looked at this issue the most carefully and the most comprehensively and correctly established that there was an easement proven under the doctrines of implied dedication in the common law by public use of a certain area, and that easement did not, the court did not expect that the easement to move. It's clear in its findings that it thought that one of the findings was that the vegetation line and the area of public use was stable, and that's what the state has got to live with now. It concedes, what's new here is that it concedes the easements created by public use.
Okay, may I ask you, the Open Beach Act states in essence that if the state has acquired an easement by prescription, dedication, or by virtue of continuous right in the public has the right of ingress and egress to the wet and beach and the dry beach. Because of the dynamics of the sea, that may not be possible to prove. Do you agree with that?
It may not be possible to prove where.
It may not be able to prove use along the sea between the tide, the mean tide line and the vegetation line, because of how that's always moving, and you may not be able to prove that. Do you agree with that?
I'm not sure I agree, but I would say if you can't prove public use of a certain area, then you don't have a right to use it.
And then my question is, then what is the purpose of that statutory language? Doesn't that language in the statute have to assume that the easement rolls?
Well, no, it doesn't have to assume that at all. And the key word in that passage is if. The state continuously has claimed that the public beach goes to the vegetation line. The public beach goes to the vegetation. That's not what the statute says. It says if an easement exists there by prescription, dedication, and continuous right, then the public will have a right to that area, to the vegetation line. It's a conditional right, and I know over time it's become less than conditional, and that's the problem. And we got to bring it back to what it was meant to do and consistent with the law. And once that happens, these workability questions are going to work themselves out. The state has the capability and the capacity to do this. It's not going to end public beaches forever. It's not foreclosing proof. It's not foreclosing consent. It's not foreclosing payment. It's not even saying that there's a static beach that never can move at all. None of that. In fact, the state is getting a quite good accommodation here because, as I said before, if you're a property owner and your land's covered with water, you're done. But if you're the state and your land's covered with water, the initial decision was correct in saying that easement by public use, uninterrupted public use that follows the water line, can continue to exist. But it can't move the easement from point A to point C. There is no common law authority for that. The Open Beaches Act does not say that. It never was intended to say that. It was a policy of expedience to avoid the difficulties of proof, because it is difficult, and it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be hard to take private property.
Wasn't it passed in response to Lutz?
Yes.
And so under your reading, then how does that, how does it adequately deal with that?
Well, it can't overturn a decision of this court. The Open Beaches Act doesn't and wasn't intended to overturn a decision of court. It was intended to marshal the state's resources to prove and protect easements that were proven. Because normally the state doesn't do that, right? Normally a public, a property owner, or someone that cares about walking on the beach has to go into court. But the Open Beaches says we'll do it. The state will do it, but we'll only do it up to the vegetation line. We'll enforce easements there, and we'll prove them if necessarily. That's what the Open Beaches did, which is quite an extension as it is, but it didn't terminate Luda's decision. It didn't overrule that decision.
Brimmer, there have been many, many amicus briefs filed. I've been through all of them. One of them asks, recognizing the dynamic nature of property in the beach area, the wind's blowing, tides are changing, it's changing every day, sometimes imperceptibly. Public easement where it exists, that's seaward, that line is changing every day. One amicus suggests that the backside of the public easement, the landward side in the dry beach, should be static, should be a line that is not dynamic. What's your thought about that?
Well, I think that's more or less the rule of law. There's a big difference between the water and the vegetation line, and the water line is the common law, recognized as the common law boundary of state ownership, impressed with the public trust. But there's no public trust in this sand, and the vegetation line is not a common law easement boundary, the line of public use is. So I think it's correct to say that the boundary, the landward boundary of that easement, is the furthest extent of the public use, not the vegetation line.
And you think that line is static?
That line, I would say that line is static, but until the point that the public can follow the water line. We got to keep our eyes on the water line, not the vegetation, because the vegetation is what's causing the problems. If you have 150 feet inland, like after Tropical Storm Francis, it's nowhere near the public use. The public use is down by the water.
And if may I ask a question?
Yes.
And if you have an avulsive event or that moves the land out into the water so that we now have uncovered land, we don't have an easement on that either because the public hasn't been using it?
I think the public has been using that land.
How?
If it's closer between, you're saying...
You say Mrs. Severance's house is right here and the high water mark is right here, and we have an event that moves the high water mark out here. What happens to that land between her house and the high water mark?
Like newly accreted land, newly accreted sand.
Exactly.
Right, and I would say that area presumably had been used by the public in the past, either sufficiently long to acquire an easement or with the acquiescence of the property owner. So I wouldn't say that accretion would mean that there's like a strip of land where the public can't get to the sea, so they're blocked. I wouldn't say that.
But it doesn't, so do we still have the, so is it your position that we would still have the public beach from where it was before the accretion all the way to the high water, to the mean high tide line?
If that area had been...
Move out toward there.
If that area had been subject to continuous and uninterrupted public use, I would say yes. Because
how could it be public use if it's underwater?
Well, as I'm saying, presumably they had used that area before sufficiently long to establish an easement.
What if it had never been that way? It's never been dry before, and now it's accreted. Do we not? We don't have a public beach there now?
Yeah, I guess I'm having a hard time imagining a situation along Texas where an area that is covered with water.
Well, lawsuits are about things happen that people didn't imagine.
With respect, it's likely it's a different case. We're here on a certified question that is about whether an easement can move inland based solely on natural changes to the vegetation. And the answer to that question has got to be no, because there is no common law authority for that in any Texas case law. What happens with down the road with in different factual situations. I know the amici in the state have tried to make this a case about a series of complicated what-ifs, but I don't think that's before the court at this time. And the question that is before the court, the answer's got to be no. There is no rolling easement in Texas common law.
Thank you, counsel. Well, it was warm in here before we started. So the case is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.